I'd like to welcome everyone to WAPMA. This is my first convention ever. It's an honor, as truly as well as a privilege to be here. We'd like to open this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. NA has no must, but the hotel has some rules. One, we request the guests under the age of 18 are accompanied by a parent at all times. Please ensure that they are not left unattended at any time. Areas that we particularly want guests to pay attention are the swimming pool, fitness center, and entrances of the hotel. Our hotel is 100% non-smoking. Therefore, please be ensured that no one is smoking within the facility. There will be designated smoking spots outside the hotel where smoking is allowed. If a guest smokes in any one of the rooms, a fine of $300 per day will be applied to your credit card in the reservation. Pets 25 pounds or less are allowed. Pet fee of $50 will apply. Pets have to be kept on a leash at all times. I've asked someone to read who is an addict.
I'm an addict. My name is Allison.
Hey, Allison.
Who's an addict? Most of us do not have to think twice about this question. We know. Our whole life and thinking is centered in drugs in one form or another. The getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. We live to use and use to live. Very simply, an addict is a man or a woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We have people in the grip of a continuous and progressive illness, whose ends are always the same: jails, institutions, and death.
Thank you. I've asked someone to read what the NA program is.
You come right up front.
I'm a recovering addict. What is the Narcotics Anonymous program? NA is a nonprofit fellowship or society of men and women for whom drugs have become a major problem. We are recovering addicts who meet regularly to help each other stay clean. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. There is only one requirement for membership: the desire to stop using. We suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. The most important thing about them is that they work. There are no strings attached to NA. We are not affiliated with any other organization. We have no initiation fees or dues, no pledges to sign, no promises to make to anyone. We are not connected with any political, religious, or law enforcement group and are under no surveillance at any time. Anyone may join us regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, or lack of religion. We are not interested in what or how much you used or who your connections were, what you have done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only in what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. The newcomer is the most important person at any meeting because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. We have learned from our group experience that those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean.
Thank you. I've asked someone to read, why are we here?
My name is Andrew. I'm an addict.
Hi, Andrew.
Why are we here? Before coming to the fellowship of NA, we could not manage our own lives. We could not live and enjoy life as other people do. We have to have something different, and we thought we had found it in drugs. We placed their use ahead of the welfare of our families, our wives, husbands, and our children. We have to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibility, we were actually creating our own problems. We seemed to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us realize that in our addiction, we were slowly committing suicide. But addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we had lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us ended up in jail or sought help through medicine, religion, and psychiatry. None of these methods were sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced and continued to progress until, in desperation, we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized we were sick people. We suffered from a disease from which there is no known cure. It can, however, be arrested, and at some point,
Thank you. Hello, family. My name is Pat.
Hi, Pat.
The identity statement. In Narcotics Anonymous, we are presented with a dilemma. When NA members identify themselves as addicts and alcoholics, cross-addicted, or talk about living clean and sober, the clarity of the NA message is blurred. To speak in this manner suggests that there are two diseases, that one drug is separate from the rest. Narcotics Anonymous makes no distinction between drugs. Our identification as addicts is all-inclusive, allowing us to concentrate on our similarities, not our differences. Press statement. As our 11th tradition says, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity of the level of press, radio, and films. The primary purpose of our public relations effort is to tell the story of Narcotics Anonymous and what our program offers to the still suffering addict. Members of the press are often attracted to our convention, and we are welcome their interest. However, we do not disclose our last names in the media as identifiable members of Narcotics Anonymous. If members of the press approach you, please direct them to the convention information booth located in the lobby of the convention center. I'd like to thank all the readers at this time to share their experience, strength, and hope. We have Tony. And if time remaining, we invite members to share from the floor by show of hands. And please limit sharing time to allow others a chance to share. And with that, I'd like to give you Tony.
Hi, family. My name is Tony. I'm an addict. Thank God I'm clean today. Thank God for the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. If you're new, welcome. Narcotics Anonymous work and we do recover. Our message is hope and the promise is freedom, that any addict can stop using, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. And I believe in our message. If you knew, welcome to Narcotics Anonymous, right? I want to thank this convention area for asking me to come out and share my experience, strength, and hope. It is truly an honor. I'm nervous as shit. I was in the wrong room. I did register, so I should have just looked to see where the room was at. But you know, it's something about when you ask to share your experience, strength, and hope that kind of gets you a little, you know, makes me nervous. I don't know about anybody else. You know, and, you know, just to share with you a little bit about my clean date is, let me tell you what my clean date. My clean date is 11/25/92. I'll be celebrating 19 years in 20 days, right? And, you know, thank God for Narcotics Anonymous, right? This program has given me a life that's worth living. I come from a place where I knew nothing about living. You know what I'm saying? Growing up, I was wounded as a child. Wounded emotionally, physically, mentally. You know what I'm saying? It was a lot of confusion in my home, and I really didn't have no type of identity. The identity that I believed in was to protect the little girl that was hurting from within. You understand what I'm saying? My mom's was fucking me up. I'm talking about to the point where she was fucking me up in front of other people. You know what I'm saying? I'm talking about, you know, I grew up in a lot of fucking isolation, man. I ain't have a lot of friends. You know, I got kicked out of school very early because of my behavior. It had nothing to do with if I was smart or not. It really had to do with my behavior. And I got kicked out of school, right, I was 7 years old. And I remember, right, not being able to be a little girl. My mother said shit like, I wish I had a little boy. Now, I don't think I was born gay. I just think that I tried to live up to an expectation to get the love and the acceptance of my mother. Right? So I come from this place of uncertainty, not knowing if I'm going to make it through. So now, you know, in the journey, on top of that, being molested and not being able to tell my moms that this shit is happening to me. So I had issues with men, little boys, long before I grew older. You know, the only way I knew how to deal with my feelings as a child was anger that turned quickly into rage. Fuck 0 point however minutes. I went to rage right away. You stepped on my toe, it was a problem. You know, and so I'm just sharing this so you can get an idea, you know, what life looked like for me. There was no men in my home. My brother came along 8 years later. So I always feel like I had to protect. So, you know, I learned how to fight very young. And I thought that was the way in protecting myself, not knowing that that shit was going to cause me more harm than good. And so as I grew into a teenager, my mom started working at nights. So it was easy for me to sneak out of the house. And see, it's something about being in the streets. The streets will teach you some shit. And it taught me how to be more fucked up than what I was already doing. I learned how to get along in the streets real easily. I ain't run with a whole lot of people. See, I thought, you know, my value was in how much weed I had, how much coke I had, and if I could get you to come along with me, you know what I'm saying, it made me feel okay about me. And you know, as the disease of addiction progressed and the using began, it was easy for me to get into that. It was easy for me to mask up and cover up because, yo, the pain and hurt that I was feeling, I couldn't tell nobody how my mother was treating me. I was too ashamed and embarrassed to let anybody know that that's how I felt. I felt like I wasn't wanted. I came to a place where I felt like I was not wanted. And I always felt like I had to push myself on people just so that you could see me. So it was easy to fight. Yo, watch out for her, man. I ain't have a good name in the projects. And so, you know, as my journey continued, right, I got introduced to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And in here I heard, regardless of sexual identity, creed, religion, lack of religion, it didn't matter. We want you to come in here anyway. We love you. And I still ain't believe in that shit. I ain't believe in that shit. I came in here, all I wanted to do was stop smoking crack, man. I really believed that my life would improve if I just had put down the drug. Not thinking that the issues that I had from a little girl was going to come in my fucking today's, man. That I was going to start living out those issues. I had major resentments. I had major anger problems. Major. They ain't put me on medication when I was little. They ain't give me none of that shit. No Prozac, Razac, whatever the fuck. They ain't give me none of that. I might have needed some of that shit, but they ain't give it to me. You know what I mean? And let me just go back for a minute, right? See, after coming here, and sharing some shit with my moms, right? Finding out that she was raped and I was that baby. Right? And now I am still in my mind saying, damn, nobody wanted me. My moms had to leave me in a hospital for 6 weeks to find a place for us to live. So I really felt like nobody wanted me. So I walked around like that. I walked around believing that nobody wanted me. You know what I'm saying? And as I kept coming back, see, it's something about pain that will make you do something different. It's something about being in pain that'll make you do something different. Because either you want to be in that pain or you want to fucking use. Because emotional pain is the worst kind of pain to endure. Especially by yourself. And it just for the day says, believe in someone who believes in you, who wants to help you in your recovery. See, I got here and I started believing in all the wrong shit. I thought the gambling spot was a place for me to be at. So I was shooting dice, talking about, baby need a new pair of shoes. I ain't got not one kid. But I'm in that motherfucker, baby need, you know what I'm saying? And these dudes and cats is coming in there with thousands. I got a transit check. It ain't equaling up. I'm ready to sell some ass and I don't know how to do all that. So I was going to have a problem. They were going to fuck me up. So I was owing a lot of people money. You know what I'm saying? Getting involved in relationships, knowing I really don't want to be with you, but you serve a need right now. See, let me tell you something. Let's check this shit out, right? Introducing myself as a victim. I come at you on some victim shit because I knew how to play that shit. I come from self-pity. I know what it is to feel sorry about a motherfucker. It's easier for me to look at you versus me looking at myself, man. Never wanting to take responsibility. That's why the literature says it's through our inability to accept personal responsibility. I never wanted to take responsibility for shit that I created. And see, you know, one thing, this program taught me to look at myself. And in that teaching me how to look at myself, it taught me how to look at my moms, man, and learn how to appreciate her instead of fucking being mad at her, man. I had to learn her story. I had to come to believe and understand that she did the best she could. She didn't have to keep me. That's some deep shit. On my ride up here, me and my mom's laughing about my nieces and shit. I'm like, them some baby kids for real. Right? One of my girlfriends said, one of my friends said, but Tony, you a baby aunt. I said, damn. I was like, you right. All I could do is laugh at that shit, man. You know what I'm saying? I was like, word. They just horrible sometimes, yo. But I'm grateful, man. I'm grateful for the ability to have a relationship with these little girls, man. Because I don't have no kids. And it wasn't because I ain't want to have none. I felt like I couldn't raise no children because of the pain that I had endured as a child. Not believing enough in this program that it would have changed my life and for me to be able to raise a fucking child. That's some deep shit, man. So I kept, you know, it's something that happens in the keep coming back process. I believe in that shit, man. Well, all that I endured in here, I done had fights. I done fucking been kicked off of shit. I done been in, I have been in a place where I was like, yo, fuck NA. Fuck these motherfuckers. Yeah, straight like that. Starting to believe in what you believe that I was in your eyes. My value system, my belief system was fucked up. It's something about the 12 steps that'll help you heal, man, to get to a better place. I had to start looking at my worth. My value ain't what I put on. Yeah, I was wearing that girl shit like a motherfucker. Had the motherfucking heels on, talking about, hey, what's up? Had my motherfucking pocketbook. Kept losing that motherfucker, but I had it. Ask the motherfuckers, yo, you see my pocketbook? It's too much. Can't keep up with this motherfucker, man. Got a big ass bag. I got a suitcase, but got two things in that motherfucker. Yo, I was in search of, man. Fuck that. The courage to change, man. The ability to do something. I can't have nobody looked at me. That's why I was like, hey. Ooh-wee, them hills was a motherfucker. People kept saying, Tony, you gotta move your hips. I ain't used to moving my motherfucking hips. See, I couldn't talk like this when I was a little girl. You know what I mean? I couldn't do that shit. That was a beat down for moms. My nieces do that shit real well. And she's sick. She got her hand on her hip like, Aunt Tony. Well, she called me Uncle Aunt Tony. Uncle Aunt Tony. I'm like, wait a minute. You can't talk to me like that. You got to take your hand off your hip. You know what I'm saying? But anyway. You know, anyway, right? You know, the ability to be able to reach in oneself. And the self-acceptance pamphlet talks about we look inward for our source of discontent. I could no longer keep walking around y'all feeling uncomfortable about me. Right. I had to start looking inside like, yo, man. And I'm talking about, y'all check this out, man. You know, I'm talking about having a sponsor who, you know, shit went crazy, and she wouldn't share my fourth step with people. Mm-hmm. You know, and still, regardless of that, still staying in the process. Still keep reaching out to somebody else, man. There's too many people in here for me to be by myself. I don't have to be by myself. There's too many cats in here, man. Coming up on 19 years, there's too many cats in here. I'm great. You know how much of an honor it is for them come ask me to share my experience, strength, and hope? I was like, get the fuck out. I ain't submit a CD, a tape, nothing. All I got was a phone call. I said, well, goddamn. I'm in the bathroom like, oh God, I'm nervous. Oh my God, I'm nervous. You know, sister came up to me and said, yo, man, I've heard you share plenty of times. I'm quite sure you'll do a good job. I was like, wow, man. That means somebody listening. Mm-hmm. Even when I think nobody listening, somebody listening. Mm-hmm. Somebody believe, man, because I believe, right? I got to a place where I started to believe, man. Right? I believe in hope. I believe in faith. I believe in trust. I believe in a power that's greater than me, that can move me to a place where I can't move myself. And I had to believe in that power. It's a process, man. This shit is a journey. It don't happen overnight. It ain't happen overnight for me. I had to bang my head a few times. I don't live this shit perfectly. I have a hard time some days still looking in the motherfucking mirror, not liking what I see. And don't let me get in a room with a few people who I don't think like me. Because immediately, that's going to determine how the fuck I shit when I'm in a meeting. And so now I've learned that, you know what? It ain't that you don't like me. I gotta like me. I gotta believe enough in myself that I like me. Regardless of my past, man. Regardless of what happened. Regardless of, you know, it's funny when shit happened, you know, I just say, oh, there she go again. Well, what the fuck that mean? There she go again. Who in this motherfucker perfect? Who in here don't have defects in character? Who in here don't believe in a God? God has been changing my life, man. I ain't in the gambling spot no more. I ain't talking about baby new pair, need a new pair of shoes. I'm in a motherfucking roller skate ring, flying around. All that energy. I'm at the racquetball court, playing ball. Carrying a message to the woman's house in Rikers Island. If anybody interested in sharing, though, let me know. I'll take your number. Definitely. We need to be able to carry this message. That's just a little, you know, hope. You know what I'm saying? But I'm talking about being able to get commitments and being involved. Being involved in my recovery. The legend says that I'm responsible for my recovery, regardless of what the fuck happened. I can't keep blaming anything and everybody for the shit that happens. At some point, I got to step up to the plate and take responsibility for myself. At some point, because see, if I don't take responsibility, right, then somebody else is going to have the power to dictate which way I move. And I don't like that shit. That's like being locked the fuck up. And they say, okay, it's time for breakfast, lunch, dinner. Okay, you can take a shower now. Now you need to go to sleep. Now you need to get up. That's how somebody else got power. I want the ability to get up for my motherfucking self. Right? I want to read this out of 11th step. See, my value, right today, my value is based in me. Not on what I wear, not on what kind of car I drive, not on what kind of job I got, because at the end of the day, I could lose all that shit. Then what you got? What you got, boo? Can you still walk around with a smile on your face? Can you still look up and get up in the morning and say, hey, like you say to the motherfuckers that's saying hey to you? Can you still do that shit? Hell no, because your value is not in yourself. It's in some other shit. It says we see that regardless of the presence of absence of material success in our lives, we can be content We can be happy and fulfilled with or without money, with or without a partner, with or without approval of others. With or without approval of others. Y'all are others. I am okay with me today. But that's only because I've done some work. It says we've begun to see that God's will for us is the ability to live with dignity, to love ourselves and others, to laugh, and to find great joy and beauty in our surroundings. Now that's some shit. I couldn't appreciate looking at the tree, the leaves falling off the motherfucking trees. Because see, I wasn't looking at none of that shit when I was using. As a matter of fact, I wasn't looking at none of that shit when I was acting out. That was too much to look at. Today, I can see the beauty that lives within me. I can see the hope that lives within me. I'm grateful because I could have missed it all. I'm grateful for the fact that I could believe in myself enough through God's grace and mercy. Because if it had not been for God's grace and mercy, I don't think I would be able to be here today. So I know it's only through God's grace and mercy. See, regardless, right? So the sponsor who did that, I got a new sponsor. Regardless. The people who don't want to be my friends, I got some other friends. Regardless. Right? I have some other people I believe in that believes in me. But I had to come to a place to believe in myself. I have a better relationship with my mother today. That's only through Narcotics Anonymous. You know, yeah, I put this shit back on. I like this shit. I don't have no pocketbook I gotta worry about. I ain't got no motherfucking heels. I gotta walk a certain way. I ain't gotta worry about. You know what I mean? I ain't gotta worry about none of that shit. Unless I decide I'm gonna put it now. If I put it back on, I put it back on. Don't be mad. Don't be mad. Because you never know when you might do it. I'm quite sure some of y'all walk around with panties on, talk one be little girl, and your little heels on. Yes, you do, D. You know, I'm going to share this and I'm done. You know, I love the people who love me, right? And I remember walking around with my little girl shit on. And D would come to the house and look at me like, okay, nigga, you going outside like that? Okay. Okay. I got on a dress with heels on. We running around town and shit. D looking like, I love you, man. I can't do that shit. So I remember one time we was in Brooklyn, right, hanging out. I think it was New Year's or something. And at the time, I was dating this chick, and she used to always say, can Tony come out and play? And, you know, I was so bent on, I'm going to do this girl thing. You know, so I was more putting on my girl shit versus, you know. But every time I heard her voice, that shit made me come out. I had to go get that boy shit, right? So we in Brooklyn. We get the call and shit. So I said, come on, D, we gotta run to the house so I can change. So we was like on some Superman shit. I was flying in the booth, coming out. I would run home and put the boy shit on, take the dress off with the boy shit on, take the fucking makeup off my face. Yo, that shit was crazy. But you know what I'm grateful for? The fact that that motherfucker stayed with me no matter what I did. She didn't give a fuck. She said, all right, we gonna change. All right, let's go. She didn't give a fuck. Whatever it was, yo, man, D, I love you for that, man. You know what I'm saying? I love you for that, man. She held me down and it didn't matter. You know what I'm saying? So I'm grateful for that shit. You know, if you knew, man, even if you old, even if you've been here some time, Even if you're struggling with staying here right now, even if you think you might want to fucking leave here, I done seen people leave here. Believe in this program, man. It says regardless, regardless. Believe in this program. This program has changed my life, and I know it's changed the lives of many others. I want to thank my sponsor for coming and supporting me. She rode all the way out here from Queens to show a sister some love, and I appreciate that, because anytime that we show up for people, it means a lot. You know what I'm saying? And with that, my name is Tony. Thanks for listening.
My name is Pat and I am an addict. Let's give it up for Tony. I'd like to welcome everyone again to Watford's first G&L. Yeah! This is my first time ever at a convention. It is truly an honor and a privilege to be standing before you. I've had so much fun since I've been here. I'm loving it, you know. And I'm coming up with 2 years.
Yeah.
Now I ain't going nowhere, because I know no matter what, I can use. Our next speaker that we have is David M.
How are you?
How are you?
I love you. Whoa. Hi, I'm David M. I'm an addict.
Hey.
Wow, first things first. I'd just like to take a moment and ask everyone to bear with me and the person that you're sitting next to, if you could give them a hug and tell them how special they are. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. You know, and that's the spirit that I would like you all to bear with me while I share my experience, strength, and hope with. You know, Tony did a really good job.
Yes, she did.
Really good job. She touched on some real important things. And I, too, I'm honored to share my experience, strength, and hope. I found this fellowship on a cold day in 1990. I have 20 years and 11 months now. But I only have today. It's always about using. It's always about struggling. And it's always reverting back to who we used to be. So I keep that upfront. As I move through life and I experience life on its own terms, I might not be who I want to be, but I'm so glad I'm not who I used to be. Regardless of is the topic. You know, G&L meetings. G&L stands for gay and lesbian. And for some reason, they sort it in their wisdom to give us our own meeting. But I need to share with you that we do not have a monopoly.
That's right.
On feelings of loneliness, fracturedness, hurt, and despair. I know if y'all are anything like me, I suffer from a disease from which there is no known cure. However, it can be arrested, and that's not a gay disease. It's a disease. When I first got here, I was so fractured. I couldn't understand why God had given it to me like he had gave it to me. I said it, them, and who when I meant he. I didn't have the ability to tell y'all who I was right away. Took me a minute. And it took me a minute because nobody taught me how to stand up. I was born the night of my three sisters' funeral. My sisters were alone in my apartment, my mom's apartment. We lived in Harlem on 122nd and Lenox. My father suffered from the disease of alcoholism, and my mom worked as a maid at the Americana Hotel. My father was supposed to be going to get my sister and pick her up from school, and he left the other three kids in the house while he did the run. But instead of coming right back, he stayed on the stoop and drank wine with the rest of the fellas. The little girls, being little girls, tried to entertain themselves and took the straw broom that my mama kept in the corner and started taking the broomsticks and igniting the broomsticks over the stove. My mother had these plastic curtains, and the broomsticks ignited to the plastic curtains, and the curtains fell on the cheap linoleum. And them being little girls, instead of running out the door, they ran to the closets to hide. All three of them perished that morning on 122nd Street. And my mother, a couple days later, walked into the funeral parlor and saw her little girls in the caskets and went into labor, and I was born 4 hours later. So there was a lot of quiet when I grew up. There was a lot of people who were just absent. There wasn't a whole lot of talking. So when I found myself at 9 or 10 in the urinal in the center, and I'm consciously looking at the next person at the urinal, I knew something was wrong. I knew something was different. I knew that something just wasn't right. And I went through a couple of years like that of just wondering why God had mocked me with such a difference. I used a lot of years because of friends like shame, degradation, loneliness, and despair. I had no sense of acceptance about my lifestyle, about what God had given me. You know, growing up in the 60s in Douglas Projects, it wasn't popular to be gay. And I tried to fight it, and I tried to hide it, and I played ball, and I tried to do all the things that little boys did. I remember going to the center and locking myself up in one of the locker rooms with one of the teenagers and letting them hit me and letting them beat on me, because if I could take punches, that meant the junior was a strong boy. Imagine going somewhere and letting somebody beat on you. Then nature took over, and my hormones began to stir up. And I remember having sex in the back staircase in the project with one of the boys. And he wouldn't tell everybody. And the next morning I got up, I was Junior the Faggot. And I rolled out of bed hating to come out. Couldn't wait to grow up. You know, don't take this wrong, but if it wasn't for the drugs, I don't think I would have survived my emotions. I think I would have went on the roof and threw myself off. I don't think I would have made it. So it was endless years of unfinished projects, and my disease progressed. I'm an old school dope fiend. I'm the guy that shot dope in his arms and necks and veins and hands. I can remember Claw, who shot drugs in his hands, and you can smell them when you got off the train. I'm that little boy, and it could have went anyway. You know, I don't know why I got this second chance. I don't know why I stopped sticking $20 through holes and expecting miracles back. I don't know why the obsession to use was lifted and I was given this opportunity to try it again. But I did get a chance. I did get that chance. And I wish I could say that I heard this message through a rehab or I heard this message through H&I, but I was in the hospital with a bandage on my neck from shooting dope and coke in my neck, and it formed the abscess, and I looked in the mirror and saw my life. And I promised God if he got me back that I wouldn't use again. And that's what happened. I made it back to the projects. And I made a decision that I wanted to live. Not get clean, I wanted to live. I got tired of stealing my mama's money and helping her look for it the next day. I got tired of taking steaks out in the middle of the night and selling it for a $3 PC. I got tired of looking like I was 80 and wearing my uncle's clothes. I got tired with the bloodstains on my jeans and being okay with it. I got tired of going up to the shooting galleries and then putting me out when I fell out and putting me in the elevator and pressing one. My life was reduced to nothing. And I ain't even talking about no sex because I wasn't having nobody. I had formed a relationship with drugs. I used to live and lived to use. Oh, but I'm so happy about the whole goddamn thing. I'm happy about the whole goddamn thing because I found a home. The Indian without a tribe was no longer prevalent. Something magical and wonderful happened. I sat in the rooms and for the first time I felt home. I didn't know how a bunch of hard chairs was going to help me heal. I didn't know about how listening to your stories would give me a sense of identification, a sense of peace that had always escaped me. I raised my hand and let y'all know how I was feeling, and y'all told me that y'all felt the same way. I thought I was the only one going in Dwayne Reed's at 4 a.m. and just running out. I thought I was the only one that was stealing Pampers in the middle of the night. I thought I was the only one putting steaks and anything I could get into a bag and just I had to use. Oh my God, what my life was like in 1990. Oh my God. I sat here and my skin cleared up, y'all. I sat here, y'all, and my Medicaid kicked in. I sat here, y'all, and I got $68.50 every 2 weeks. I sat here, y'all, and I got my teeth fixed. And I noticed that the outside was beginning to heal. With my new sense of surrender, God was giving me some stuff. But you know what the real hit was? That something stirred up. Hope was born. And the old adage of one addict always being an addict began to dissipate. And I started to feed my stuff with some new information. Oh, I look forward to the key tags. I look forward to the 60 and 90 day chains. And I met some friends here. And I stopped feeling so alone. You know, when I go back over the beginning, if I didn't build my foundation on bricks, I wouldn't have survived the stuff that comes our way because we all get our turn. Trust me, we all get our turn. So I'm so glad that I did the stuff in the beginning. I'm so glad that I got the beginning right. Because we're going to need the beginning. Because some of the stuff that I did then, I do now. I make a meeting. I share where I'm at. And let somebody know how I'm living. And those three things was my formula. You know, I got a sponsor early on, and I've done service since I got here. And it's regardless of where we at financially, we don't care what your professions are. We don't care what you do for a living. There's doctors here and there's people who clean houses here. We leave our professions and our titles at the door. And we come in and we share the things that we have in common. And that's the disease of addiction. See, we don't even ask you to have a gold chain here. It's not a requirement that you drive here. It's not a requirement that you come done and dressed here. The only requirement is that we have an inkling, just a want to, just a desire to stop using. And you'll remember when you say you're a member. Oh, so it got good, y'all. I cleaned up real nicely. Got a job. Got some keys to my own place. And I was on my way, y'all. Then I met a hostage. Oh, because I wanted it all. I had some things that I had to make up for. I had some things that I had lost along the way in my act of addiction. I still had this fantasy about the big home and white picket fence and him being inside. So I would put anybody in my dream. People who hadn't earned the right to be there, I put them there because I had to live this fantasy. I had gotten clean, so where was my reward? Oh, they told me it was too early for all of that, David. They told me things will come. I ain't listening to y'all. He loved me. I was gonna make him mine. I didn't care that he needed a pack of Newports. I didn't care that he didn't have a Metro card. He loved me. So I moved him in and I bought a car. Didn't even drive or didn't have a license. Brand new car. I was gonna make him be mine. Soon as I bought the car, he picked up. And I found myself walking the nights and going to every park in New York City trying to find him in my car. I needed him to come home so he could be the man that I had dreamed about him being. He would steal the VCRs and I'd come home and there'd be grease stains on my sheets. My watches and my wallet would disappear regularly. But my story was, treat me any way you like, just don't leave me. Because I needed you to love me. I didn't have that mechanism of self-sufficiency. It just didn't kick in for me. I needed to be validated. Despite my success of winning my addiction, it had crept in other ways. I use to live and live to use. I'm talking about without the chemical. Oh, I needed him to hug me. I needed him to tell me that I did all right that day. Oh man, I went through a 4-year ride. I thank God that I survived it. And I love him today because I've never repeated that. I needed not to be cheated out of that experience. I needed to go through what I needed to go through. And the hit is now we both clean. You know, and I find joy in that. You know, a lot has happened. And while I was going through that, I found that I was powerless over my addiction and that my life had become unmanageable. And addiction was very inclusive. And it didn't mean being powerless over crack. It didn't mean being powerless over heroin. It meant being powerless over my addiction. Because if this program was about smoking crack and drinking wine, after the obsession to use is lifted, we can all get up and leave. But we have found that the use of drugs is just a symptom of the core of our problem. You mean, isn't it enough that I stay clean? No. We ask that you go a little further here in this program. We ask that you surrender to a change in behavior. We ask that you begin to surrender to the fact that you can't go on with the lifestyle. We ask that you begin to even entertain the possibility that there be a change in our attitudes and our thinking. Because our thinking was stinking. I had a hard time with that. I said, I put the dope down, God, and I took the spike out of my neck, God. I've been a real good boy for the last 5 years, God. Why I still feel like I'm using? It's because I had to change my thinking. And I had to change my way of how I saw myself living. And I had to realize that I didn't need someone to validate my feelings, that at some point I needed to stand on my own. So I was powerless over my addiction, and I had to talk about other things besides drugs. If you knew, the first part of recovery is abstinence. We have to stay clean. But we got so much work that we need to do, but we do it a day at a time, so don't be overwhelmed. You know, I got some keys and I got an apartment and I got a job and I got some hope back, and I did service and I went to college and graduated cum laude and came back and wanted a secretary named Della Street, and I applied to several law schools and was turned down, and then that one Saturday morning was my acceptance letter from law school, and got into law school and graduated with my Juris Doctorate. And I failed the bar twice. And something happened along the way where I got scared. I got scared of y'all, and I got scared of the disappointment that it put some fear in my life. And I've taken the bar twice, and I have not signed up for it again. A lot of my friends encouraged me, but it's not going to happen until I'm ready for that to happen. Well, I'm ready, y'all. I'm ready, y'all. I've decided to give it my best shot. It's almost like, you know, running the marathon and getting to the finish line and not crossing. That's what it feels like. I feel bad when I write the check every month and I'm not practicing. So I'm doing it again, y'all, and I'm taking y'all with me. You know, before I shut up, because I've already been given the time sign, I need to share that this program is about exchange. Sponsorship is the heartbeat of this program, but we have to realize that when we get real, it's about one addict helping another addict. I got 20 years and I've been helping a lot of people. I need some fucking help of my own. I don't have no monopoly on this. You know, my serenity that you see and my sense of well-being comes as a result of the meetings and the work that I've done. There's some still days, y'all, when I'm putting on my shoes and don't know where I'm going. There's some days with the concept of sleeping by myself in a bed. It's miserable. I find myself seeking the happiness through strangers again. And I need to share with you that my periods of insanity, because I have reference points of getting through my feelings, my periods of sanity, thank God, do not last. Some stuff just doesn't work for us anymore. I used to find a lot of comfort in the $20 bill. You'd be surprised what somebody will do for $20. And I share that not as a badge. I share that from that's where we can go. But I found an antidote, y'all. And the moments, you know, what are we supposed to be doing with these double digits? All this fucking clean time now what? Can I talk to your husband sitting here a while?
Yeah.
Now what? Well, I got a monthly meeting. I sit in my living room and I invite my sponsees over and we do something called step work. And we tear up those steps. and we extract some of the spiritual principles that we find in the step work. Honesty, willingness, open-minded, trust, perseverance. And I take those principles, y'all, and I live those principles today. I live so I can elevate my life to a spiritual condition that feels like I'm closer with God. It's not a religious program, but it's so spiritual. Our steps talk about God all through it. And don't get scared with that word. It's a God of our understanding, but we need something greater. We need a level of humility. Still, to ask Him to come down and help us. We don't ever have to be what we was no more. Our innate, our natural flow of life didn't call for us to go down with a crack stem in our mouth. The God that we know didn't deliver us to be in suffering. So I try to remember that, man. You know, I try to remember, you know, that I'm not perfect. That I suffer with defects of character. But I know that there is a God. You know, and this program has introduced me to Him. And there's times that I have to call upon Him when I'm lonely. When it seems like everything's uphill. When I get paid and the whole check has to go for bills. I'm talking about the whole check. God, help me. Help me, God. Help me to get clearer. Help me to get to know You better. Help me to be self God-reliant rather than self-reliant. I don't know, man. I've made a commitment to really develop people who got my back. I made a commitment to develop those relationships. I don't need no lover. I need somebody who understands me. I need somebody who can identify with how I'm feeling. I find that in my friendships. I find that in my sponsor relationships. We don't gotta be screwing for you to get it. I'm happy about the whole goddamn thing. I really am. You know, before I shut up, you know, G&L meeting was good for me in the beginning. You know, I used to get very offended when I would go to mainstream meetings and members would raise their hand and say that their bottom was with another man. I ain't nobody's bottom. I'm a child of God. So what I needed in the beginning is not necessarily what I need now. I go to regular meetings and I say He when I mean He. They can't put us out, y'all. They can't put us in the back rooms of conventions and call it G&L. We at 1:30 in the afternoon in broad daylight because we ain't got nothing to feel ashamed about. I'm going to keep coming because my life depends on it. If you're new and you're struggling with this program, this too shall pass. We can't promise you jobs here. We can't promise you a relationship. We can, however, promise you a sense of freedom that's always escaped you. We can promise you that you'll get your families back. I can't promise you that you'll get your families back, but I can promise you better relationships with them. And keep coming, y'all. And let's hold each other's hands while we do it. I don't have to tear you down so you can feel better. So I can feel better. I don't have to be jealous of Carlos's or Rob's or Deidre's success because when they win, I win. I'm tired of the way we treat each other. We treat each other so badly sometimes. The disease wants us dead and suffering. Let's go to the light, y'all. Let's grow up and let's hold each other's hands. Thank you for allowing me to share.